The EVD, or Ebola virus disease, that plagued West Africa from 2014 to 2016 killed more than 11,000 people, and according to the World Health Organization, was the result of over 26,500 cases. And those numbers, they climbed when the outbreak reached outside of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Today, we hear about one man's complicated feelings of surviving an epidemic, losing loved ones, and living with that aftermath. This is the Monday Conversation on And Another Thing. We're focused on one guest story today. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. Alpha Kabine Kaba, also known as Bisco to his students, is originally from Guinea. He now lives in Holyoke, teaching African drum and dance at the Pioneer Valley Performing Arts Charter School in South Hadley. Back in 2014, just before the Ebola outbreak, Bisco traveled back to Guinea for the first time in 15 years and brought with him a group of his students in his drum and dance company, Wofa. After he returned to the U.S., he lost three family members to Ebola, including his mother. We recently spoke with Bisco about that loss and also about what he gained by being able to introduce his school family to his actual family in Guinea.
I was working with this local company. Group was created to help young people to get them out of the street. The young people who cannot go to school, cannot afford it, or the family cannot afford it. Luckily, I had a chance to be in the local dance company, and I started dancing, drumming. And we start traveling, make a little money. I come support my mom, so I stick with it. I'm like, okay, this might be work. And then that's the group called Les Merveilles de Guinée had a contract to come to United States, and that's how we got here.
Since you arrived in the United States, have you come across any challenges trying to settle here as a West African here in New England?
Oh, yes, a lot. The first challenge that I had, it was not making money, could not afford what I need to. But even I was with the group, we was not making that. We pretty much not make anything because they have to pay the rent, everything. 2001, I was driving to California to go sell my craft. I just buy a green card for somebody. You know, I don't speak English that much. But this guy really take advantage from me, say, oh, I can give you a green card. I can help you get a social security and working permit. So I pay money, $2,000, but he gave me fake paper. I don't know the difference. So while I was driving with those paper, I got stopped by police, and I give them my license, all my paper. They check it. It was not valid. So they take me to the police station, and from there, they move me to Pennsylvania immigration jail. And 28 days later, I find a lawyer. The judge say I have to pay $8,000 to let me go, and I have a 3 day to do that. If I don't pay, they're going to deport me. That was a really challenge for me. I was not eating in prison there. I wasn't doing it. I was freaking out. I was worried. I don't know what's going to happen. But luckily, my lawyer stepped up. You know, he fight for me. And every school, everywhere that I perform, everywhere, every prison that I donated my time to teach, each one of them write me a letter to the judge to tell them that how much important I am for this country. Judge say, okay, no problem. So, Mr. Kaba, we're going to give you 3 days. Bye. Have a good day.
You went through a lot in the first many years that you were here. Tell us about when you founded your group, Wofa, and what that meant to you.
One of my friends, Jai, she called me. She said, hey, I'm going to go audition for, they're looking for African drum and dance teacher at PVP. I'm going to go, can you come drum for me? I'm like, yeah, sure. But what she did, she went to office to have a talk with the director. She actually don't talk about herself. I was sitting outside, I have no idea. She talked about me. She told them, to be honest with you, if you're looking for African drama, then Bisco is the person. He was born and raised in this culture. So he's the one who can be better. So when they read my resume, they said they don't need audition. Resume was enough. I was thinking in a long time I was going to create a group in Massachusetts. But when I got PVPA, and I'm like, wow, this is a perfect spot to do that with the young people so they can grow up into the culture. So that's how I create Wofa, and I give it the name Wofa, pretty much what you mean, let's get together.
So Wofa is then formed, and then you go on this school trip. Tell us what that was like when Ebola was actually a threat in West Africa and you have these students with you in another country.
Yeah, that was another challenge to make that trip. It was a challenge between I and the school. It was a challenge between I with some parents who don't trust that a kid gonna be safe there. It was a challenge to do fundraise, to raise $30,000. It was a lot of work, but you know, with the student, there was my motivation, and my WOFAP student parents, there was my driving force. If it was just me, I didn't think I could make that far. After 15 years, I didn't see my mom, so that's when I decided to go to Guinea. I didn't believe it was gonna happen. I'm like, well, let's do, but I don't know if it is gonna work. But I had a WOFAP parents who believe it's gonna be possible to do it. To go to Guinea, it's not just me go to Guinea. It was my student meeting my family, my mom, brother, and sisters, to see where I came from and to witness everything that I've been shared with them in person in Guinea. So that was a big, special thing for me. And then 15 years later, to go see my mom.
Tell us a little bit more about what it meant to you to be able to introduce your students to your family there.
Oh, it meant the whole world to me. I don't think I'm going to have anything in my lifetime that can be better than that. Even I have a house full of money, I don't think it will beat that down. Those kids, we've been together for so long. I told them, my family, about them. Some of them, I even showed them the picture. Some of them, sometimes when my sister called, I showed them. They can hear them talk. They can say hi. But they speak French. They speak English. But, you know, that's how we started. Once I got back in January, the student and the chaperones, they was like, oh, Bisco, you know what? We feel like, because I was going to stay for 3 weeks too. But they say, you should stay for longer. Into February, spend some time with your family. You haven't seen them for 15 years. But when we go back, we let school know that. We take care of that. And that was a huge, but I didn't know that until after. So I spend a lot of time. Every morning, I get breakfast with my mom.
Shortly after you returned, you found out that you had lost some close family members.
When I got back and they called me, say, my nephews are sick. And 2 days later, they told me, oh, her mother is sick too. The boy's mother, my brother's wife. And my mom was taking care of them. They don't tell me actually till 3 days that my mom is sick because they don't want to freak me out. But when it got very serious, they know that she's not going to make it. That's when they called me when my mom was laying at the hospital. And I called and just talked to her a little. We don't even talk. Only word she said is she said, because she called me Grandpa Mbemba. She said, Mbemba, I'm sick. Mankende. She said, Mbemba, I'm sick. I'm very sick. Let me pass your telephone to your sister. We can talk. And she didn't say bye. She didn't say talk to later. That was the two words she said. And that was the last word that I heard from her. You know, it's not like it was a national news that time. It was like people was talking about it. Oh, it's some sickness coming, it's the Ebola. So, and it's after the student left January, like at the end of the January, and it was start come up on the radio, the TV, they start talking about it. They start talking how many people start dying in the village.
And so do you see any correlation now? Like when you speak to your students and you speak to people, do you bring up the fact that you were right there in West Africa as Ebola was about to hit, and how people here in America or even in New England should pay closer attention?
Most of the kids that listen, actually most of the time, even I start sharing that, like I never finish the story where our students start crying. You know, they get into it so much. But I still share with the student, I still share with the community, I still share with the friends if the occasion present.
You know, during the pandemic, during the last 18 months, when people lost loved ones, they may have been able to jump on a plane and maybe go see them if they were in country. You lost 3 family members on a different continent. How were you able to console your family members and even support yourself during that?
I wasn't sleeping much. I pretty much was leading my family, pretty much. I have to call them every morning, which is at 3 a.m. here. It's at 7 a.m. over there. Call them, tell them what they need to do. They need to make sure they have a hand sanitizer in front of the house when they go, and they need to stay home. My little brother was in that, and I told him if he's not listening to me, I won't do nothing that he wanted me to do for him. In the time, I was paying for his school, everything that he wanted. So he understand that I was serious. When COVID-19 came, it bounced back what happened to my family during Ebola time. This time I want to make sure that they're not going to that to happen because they're not paying that much attention. They're too busy for other things. So I have to like remind them because I don't want to go through that again. So I have to call them in the morning and the afternoon and make sure I send them the money for food because if nobody was working, everything was shut down for food and for the stuff they need to keep themselves safe and protect.
You've talked about having a close relationship with your mother. Tell us about her. What was she like?
My mom, she was everything. Married to my dad, had a 9 kid. My mom was, I guess, so getting kid like orphans or anybody who don't have family or somebody who need a home and bring them and put them in school and support them and raise them. So he did that for so many kids, like so many. She never stopped until she died. So she was a very giving person, very loving and caring. I never see my mom mad my whole life. They used to call her European woman when I was young. She talked to us and make us understand. In African culture, you don't see that often. We over there, we whoop kid, you know, very unique person.
She sounds like she was absolutely extraordinary, and I'm so sorry that you were so far away from her when she passed. So many people now across the world have been through a similar experience of losing a loved one when they were far apart from them. What would you say to those people?
My advice on those people is to start with the praying for these people first. Because in African culture, we believe crying, it doesn't. The person is going to struggle to where they need to go. But praying is the peaceful they can have to go home where they go. And make sure that you take a second and make sure you take care of yourself because that can be a drama that can really affect you. And as soon as it affects you, you can pass that into your kid or anybody you live with. It's a human energy. If it's a negative, you feed other people. If it's a positive, you feed away.
You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. When we return, we'll hear from our guest about his plans to return to his native Guinea, and he'll share his dream of following in his mother's footsteps in caring for children who have been left orphaned by Ebola and COVID. Stay with us.
You're listening to And Another Thing. I'm Derek Kennedy. Our Monday conversation today is with Alpha Cabinet Caba, founder of WOFA, the music company launched in Western Massachusetts to help educate and engage kids in African music and technique.
And I'm Maya Schwader. Bisco tells us today that Guinea, a West African country home to more than 13 million people, has also suffered from COVID-19, but his memories of the Ebola outbreak still linger.
Before COVID came, Guinea was already on track by fighting with Ebola. So everybody already had that experience, a lot of family. So when COVID came, they added that. They make that a little stronger, that safety and that to protect everybody. But my surprise was to see everybody doing what they ask you to do, wearing masks, wash your hands.
So it sounds like it was a real community effort. What lessons have you taken from watching Guinea struggle with Ebola and now watching the whole world really struggle with COVID?
You know, disease is something is come around. You don't know where you're going to get, when you're not going to get. That was a huge lesson learned for me. I was worried about my family mostly than myself in here. African, even now, some people refuse to vaccinate because they don't trust the vaccine. But a reason of that is a lot of kind of vaccine in Africa. Some vaccine, they're not a real vaccine. People die from the vaccine. It was not a real vaccine. So that make everybody too scared.
As an artist and a creative here in New England during the pandemic, people like you that go out and perform for the masses, what did you do during the shutdown?
The extra job that I was having, extra pay, I lost those. My financial got really crazy, so I have to give my car back to the bank. I have to give up on that. But I was at home, go nowhere, and stay here, worried for my family, worry about my other family who live in the USA, which is my student, my friends. You know, I was worried about pretty much everybody because it was too crazy. When the school started, I was teaching class here in my home. I didn't even play drum for real. I would just play my fingers in my apartment to teach.
Do you have any plans right now to try to return to Guinea again soon? Or are you staying hunkered down while COVID is still around?
It's been 5 years. I haven't gone. Every time I'm away for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I lost a lot of people die. I can't be the funeral. I start thinking about I need to try to go every year if I can. It's just hard because it's expensive. But I'm planning to go in December, and I talked to my school. They're really very, very supportive. I can go December to February, so I can spend 2 months with my family. Usually I go for 3 weeks. So now I'm on track to save money.
How are your students responding to finally being able to be in person again and create again?
They're very happy about it. They feel like they're back to life. They have so many energy, so much excitement that it's hard to talk to them. They was everywhere. They're happy seeing each other. They haven't performed in drum for a long time. And they always say that, I'm so happy that we're in person. I'm so happy that we're in person, which is good.
Those students who you took to Guinea back in 2014 have now graduated. They're adults. Are you still in touch with them at all?
Oh, yeah. They're my babies. They never stop getting in touch with me. Never. Sometimes they invite me, they're home. Sometimes I make a food, I invite them. We call a Wofa reunion. We play drum and we talk about memory, the trip. So yeah, I'm still very in touch with them.
We are approaching the end of the year. The pandemic has taken over everyone's lives, but there seems to be a renewed energy going into the holidays. You leave for West Africa in December. What are your plans?
The big goal I have right now is to save money and to make sure that I know all the protocol that I need to do for my safety first from here and to getting into the country. During pandemic, I give my car back and I work hard. I save that money and I save the other money. So I buy land for myself and I buy another land where I want to build the orphanage or children's center. That's my big goal. If I can save money, I really want to build a school that can represent the orphan kid, the kid who parents died by Ebola or from anything, or kid who doesn't have a home. We got so many of that. I have two of them that I'm adopting my own. They're with my family. So if I can do that, have a children's center where they can stay, and have people who can work with them. They can learn arts, African culture art, and education is something that I can leave behind me as a legacy that I will never regret.
That sounds like an extraordinary plan. If you managed to establish that school, would you ever bring another group of students from the U.S. back over to Guinea to visit?
I will, as long as it won't be that that challenge, because it took us almost a year to raise that $30,000. It was no off, no weekend, no week, nothing. I will organize it again. I will find a chaperone who can help me. Only part is the financial. Even the one already went, they want to go back again.
Now that you've been in America for a very long time, what would you say your highlight has been and your low light?
As a human, for me, you don't have one home. You don't have one family. You know, you can call your biological family. You can call that. But wherever you're going to end up, it doesn't matter how long, that's your home. That's your other home. For example, I came to USA. I built a family here. And those family, I was going through so much. And those the people, those the family who was there for me. Sometimes I can be stuck in, I don't even know how I'm going to pay my rent. And I have to call these people and they have to support me into that, to cover that for me and until I'll be able to pay. If I don't have a food, because all this happened to me here. These people drove all the way here, dropped me a food. Even during pandemic, I didn't call, but people just drove and then they bring the food at my door and text me and sit in the car. Basically, we got something for you. You got to come. I'm like, why? And I go, I see that. You know, that's what I would say. Where you're from is not just the home. That's not only home. Am I from Guinea? But I'm not only from Guinea. I live here. So this is my home too. This is where anything happy will happen me here. Those are the people going to step up for. So anybody, I would say, wherever you go, stay humble. Make sure that everybody's equal in your life, around you. And you have to be that example to anybody you met, young, old, adult, whatever. You have to be that person, that exemplar to show them that's how you operate it. That's how it should be. Because you can't even teach other people without knowing that. That would be my advice.
You're listening to And Another Thing and our Monday conversation with Bisco, the African drum and dance teacher at PVPA in South Hadley. Heard here performing one of his native songs.
Song that I created here every time I miss actually when I was a wolf out when we came from Guinea, that's the song that I created for my family. Actually, I created for my mom when I miss her. That's the song I sing, drum, go to the park, and I started including my family name, my siblings, and I jumper. I started building my students' name, my friends' name, so it became the whole family song. Wunaminde, what you mean? Where are you?
That is a lovely sentiment to end on. Bisco Alpha Kabine Kaba, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the Monday conversation on And Another Thing, where we focus on one guest and their unique story. Find more episodes on our page at nepm.org. I'm Dara Kennedy.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter at AAT on NEPM. I'm Maya Schwader. Have a great evening.